Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright sunshiny day. Gonna be bright sunshiny day. I think I can make it now, the pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. It's gonna be
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to make during this broadcast, you can feel free to email them to me at bonk@aol.com. That's bonk@aol.com. I'm really sorry for last week. We had a cancellation in our show because our scheduled guest, Dr. Margalis Fielstad, had a problem with her telephone system. She had just moved and to another part of the country, getting everything set up, and things had just failed. So she apologized profusely because I know some people were really excited about her appearance, and she will be joining us on May 15th. So on May 15th, Dr. Fielstad, who's the author of the book Stop Caretaking the Narcissist Borderline Personality, will be our guest. And if you have any questions that you would like her to address, that means you have time to send them in to me, and I'll be happy to, you know, read them to her on the show. Tonight, our guest is supposed to be Kathy Holguin from California. She's a family therapist. I'm waiting for Kathy to call in. And while I'm doing that, I just wanted to announce that next week there will not be a show because of the fact that we're having our healing weekend. And I'm very excited about that. I'm going to be meeting with women from all over, not just the country, but from Europe as well, and Canada, as we join together to see how we can unite together on our issues. I think that one of the problems with this whole situation is that you just feel so isolated, like you're doing it all alone, and that people aren't there to give you the support that you need because they don't understand it. I think that very often, unless you're living this experience, people can be sympathetic, they can be empathetic, but they just don't get it. So a lot of people just can't understand why we just can't get over our marriages and move on. Lots of marriages end, there's lots of divorces, and yet people seem to get over it and move on. They just have no clue that when you're going through these marriages, how much more difficult they are. So getting together and having healing weekends and meeting new people, you know, it's such a wonderful feeling. And even though it is pretty much at the end of the line, if you really would like to join us and you feel that this is something you really need, you know, we can always make room for one more. So if you feel this is where you would like to be next weekend, it's going to be a wonderful weekend right outside of Washington, D.C., please feel free to email me at bonk@aol.com and put in the headlines, Urgent Healing Weekend, and I will be happy to see what we can do to get you into that wonderful situation. While I'm waiting for Kathy, I'm going to talk about another guest that we're going to be having on, and this is a guest who was referred to me by one of my support group members, and her name is going, I would like to talk to you a little bit about her name and about who she is. She's going to be on our show next month, and her name is Kim Corley. And Kim is just an amazing woman who is a coach, and she also has articles that she's written, and she has a blog, and she works with people who are in abusive relationships. And she has some really wonderful articles on the internet that were very inspirational. And when I, you know, read her articles, I was, like, really inspired. And she is going to be on our show, like I say, next month. And one of the things that she wrote about, and this was a blog that I saw, was Emotionally Abusive Relationships, Reclaiming Your Power. This is an article that was sent to me. And I'm going to read a little bit of it while I'm sitting and waiting for Kathy. And it says, Emotionally Abusive Relationships, Reclaiming Your Power. Emotionally abusive relationships can drain your self-esteem until little is left of the strong woman you used to be. But you can learn coping tools to help manage the verbal abuse in marriage, deal with the controlling behavior, and ultimately take back your power. Continue reading to find out how to manage Darth Vader and Cruella Devil in 7 steps. And I thought that was really cute to put it that way. But here it goes with, and so it happens to you again. You're left upset, hurt, bewildered, and disoriented. And let's not forget scared. Yet, if someone were to ask you, how are things or what's new, the last thing you do is reply with, I've just been abused and I'm not sure what to do. Denial, the ever-powerful emotion that is often the coping tool of choice, keeps us in place and wondering what to do next. I loved pretending all was well when I was married to Darth Vader. I was ashamed and humiliated to be in such a difficult position, thinking that I could just ignore my problems away. We were a successful couple with a few children, working hard to live the American dream. Both of us had careers. Note here, I not only had a career, but I owned a successful company and made more money than my ex-husband, and yet I stayed for years. And we had friends and family that we saw on a regular basis. What none of them knew was that I was suffering an abusive relationship and I was slowly coming apart. I began confiding in my sister, who told me one day that she heard the same thing from me, time after time. I started paying attention. As the arguments and assault surfaced day by day, year after year, I realized I was in quite a predicament, but I was determined not to let this define me. My belief is that deep down we know what's going on, we just have no means of handling some of the challenges and are left with extreme options, either deny what's happening or dramatically address the situation and publicly handle the abuse. For me, calling an abuse hotline was not an option. What was I going to tell them? My husband had been yelling at me. I was left with one simple solution. I had to figure out how to take back my power. I realized that if I didn't, I would be the next physical hit spouse. The fear led me to therapy, which led me to learning coping tools, which led me to coming up with ways to manage the verbal assaults and controlling behaviors. It worked, as I was able to learn these steps and manage myself in this situation. I took the kids, the dogs, the cats, the fish, and left. It was a rough ride, but I got out of the tunnel. My work now is dedicated to those who are in these situations that seem to be endless and full of suffering. I offer you these 7 tips that have proven effective for me and countless others as I work to share and support those that are in difficult situations. 1, buckets and boundaries. All of us have our own path and our own responsibilities to manage. I think of them as our own bucket of stuff. Just like your friend, spouse, mom, dad, sis, bro, boss, etc. has their stuff or bucket, so do you. Understanding that they are as responsible for their world and their issues or bucket just as you are helps give you the space you need to create boundaries. Boundaries will help you create some distance between their happiness, issues, and keeping them calm and yours instead of you worrying about keeping them happy and calm, whatever the demand of the day is. Your job is to take care of your bucket and your own issues. You are not here to be a conduit for their peace of happiness or calm, just as they aren't there for yours. 2, I statements. When you own your communication, you begin the process of taking back your power and not responding to demands, allegations, insults, and threats. Using your I statements is as easy as saying, I don't want to get in the car with you when you're yelling at me, versus saying, you're pissing me off when you yell at me and I can't take it anymore. The mere use of the word you puts someone on the defensive and makes the attacker have to defend his or her actions, escalating the situation. This isn't about being right or wrong. It's about taking care of you and learning how to step aside from the verbal assault. Give it a big mental whatever. And I really love this when Kim was talking about give it a mental whatever. And to be honest with you, I also added to Kim when I was talking to her, and I said, it doesn't have to just be a mental whatever. It could also be a verbal whatever. So that when somebody is trying to yell at you or talk to you, instead of sitting and arguing, you know, as I said to her, when I tell people, just say, whatever. I mean, it really takes the strain off of it. But as Kim was saying in this article, it took me 40 years to realize that if a question was asked of me and an answer was demanded, that I could make the choice and not answer. When someone is coming at you, my term for how verbal abusers engage in demanding and threatening behavior with their words, they are often working to get you to talk to them so they can argue and attack. And to get you to talk to them, they will often ask you questions. If you're in a verbally abusive relationship, you will try to answer and try to explain, all to no avail. Instead of engaging, try meeting every demand, comment, etc., with a whatever and simply let it go. Realizing this is easier said than done, I used to write this out on a piece of paper and carry it with me. It was a great reminder that I could just disengage rather than to get them to reason with me, which I think is so important because people who get you into an argument, they really are looking for you to argue back with them because they know that it's going to upset you. And I think that so many of us who live with the whole emotional abuse situation where our husbands are frustrated because they're living in a situation they don't belong in and they're taking it out on us, they're going to look for reasons to pick fights with you to make them feel better about their own misactions. So here it says you cannot XXXX them out of this. You can't fill the blank of XXXX with the word love or reason or logic. They all work the same. If you are with an abuser, you are not going to be able to love them more to change the situation or reason with them to get to see what is happening. Or, my favorite, logically address in an illogical argument. It simply isn't going to happen. The loving thing to do for you and for them is to stop the cycle, end the pattern, and disengage. 5 is watch yourself talk. Often when we are emotionally abusive relationships, we start incorporating some of the same damaging words we have heard in our daily thoughts. Maybe I'm not smart enough or good enough, or maybe my family is really awful, or maybe I should listen to him because he knows who I am and how to love me. When I was verbally abused, I would write out what was said to me, and then I would look at it the next day. Often getting the space I needed to get out of the moment would create some time for my psyche to heal. As I would read the words the next day, I would realize that they were simply inflammatory and off base. The challenge is that if you hear these insults, accusations, etc., continuously, they often become part of the fabric of your daily self-talk. The next thing she says in number 6 is feed your mind. Actively find positive books, tapes, people, situations, anything you can counteract the negative impact and effects that the verbal abuse is having in your mindset. Thankfully, these resources are everywhere, so this type of information is easily found. A good way to think of this is that you're around someone else and heard what happened to them, and you would be upset, appalled, and probably concerned for them. And if you could help then, you could probably recommend they do something positive for themselves. Love yourself enough to do this for you. There is no shame in being abused. You are a victim, period. And 7 is watch out for the dripping faucet. If your kitchen faucet drips, no biggie. You get it fixed and all is well. If your kitchen faucet drips day after day, month after month, year after year, and nothing is done to fix it, the pipes will rust out, and eventually they'll have big holes in them. Verbal and emotional abuse, controlling people, are like dripping faucets, bit by bit, day by day. Your sense of self will rust out, and after time, there is nothing left of you. Creating the perspective of looking at things for what they are versus what you want them to be is the key to moving you along. If you experience abuse, you can often excuse the behavior because they had a bad day or they didn't understand what they were trying to explain. And yet, we all know that with controlling people and abusers, the put-downs, manipulations, and assault happen again and again. Sometimes the fights aren't as bad, and sometimes they are treacherous. But either way, it is the quiet continuous of fights and issues that will often lead us to think that this is our normal world, and maybe this isn't so bad. Give yourself the gift of validating what is happening, not excusing the behavior. It is what is, and no one deserves to be abused or controlled in any way. A gentle reminder that this does not define you. You are worthy, valuable, and it's not an accident that you are here. Take back your power and love yourself for all that you are. If you can't do it for you, do it for your children or your grandchildren or your parents or your pet or simply humanity as a whole. And this is from Kim Coral, and I think it's just a beautiful article. If any of you are listening and you would like a copy of this, just write to me at bondk@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send it to you because I think it's so important, as Kim says in this article, and she'll be talking with us, like I say, next month, that you have to keep reading positive things. You have to realize that the more information you have to reinforce what you already know about yourself. So many times we doubt ourselves. When you're being attacked day in and day out and you hear the abusiveness, you start thinking, maybe there is something wrong with me. I know as a fact from working with so many women for so many years, it's been over 30-some years, that on almost every case, the women that I meet are just top-of-the-line women. In other words, good, kind, caring, loving women. And I always tell the women in our healing weekends and in our group meetings that it's no accident that about 85% of us are in the helping field. We're therapists, we're doctors, we're counselors, we're mental health workers, teachers. You name the helping field, that's what straight wives are made up of, helpers. In 85% of the cases, and there's just, you know, no reason why this would happen unintentionally. This is intentional, that when a man is going into a marriage that he's unsure of himself, he's looking for someone who will be understanding and nurturing. So he's looking for a helper, and that's why so many of us are in this role, because we're always trying to make things better. And I think that as helpers, that's what we try to do. And when you have a husband who's gay, this is not something that you can ever help away. It's not something you can ever make better. I mean, it's a mistake of a marriage. And when you get into these marriages, it's not with ill intentions. As I always say, about 95% of these marriages were done out of love, or what the gay husband thought would be a loving marriage. He was hoping against hope that he could love you enough that those feelings would go away. But we can't change what gay is, And I think the problem is that women keep trying so hard. You know, it's really difficult for them to accept the fact that they can't fix this problem. We're so good at fixing everything else, and we feel like this is our responsibility to be fixer-uppers, and yet there's just no way that that's happening. So that's why the more you read and the more support you get in realizing that this isn't you, and that's why on Kim's particular website, there's a lot of wonderful information, and she's part of a group, womensdivorce.com, and there's lots of wonderful information on here all about starting over, divorce emotions, dating again, relationships, you know, making ends meet, career tips, general information, divorce blog about the split, making the decision, divorce basics. Let me check out what some of the divorce basics here. Or about the marital separation, things to think about when you split up, how to get divorced, how it works, and what to consider. Financial, legal professionals. And I think that we have Kathy coming on here in just one moment, so let me grab her. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Bonnie.
I was just talking to the people waiting for you to come and hoping you would.
I am. Oh, my goodness. I apologize to all the listeners. I am so sorry. I just got
That's
held
okay.
up, and I just am so sorry. That's not like me.
It's not a problem. I was entertaining them with a future guest who's coming on next month. I was really excited to find this woman, and it was through one of our women in our support network. Actually, the woman who had referred her to me, you know, is one of our members from England, and the woman happens to be here in the United States, and her name is Kim Coral, and she wrote this wonderful article about, you know, emotional abuse. And so I was reading it to the group, and just to recap some of the ideas, because you as a therapist, you know, certainly work with this issue a lot. But she was talking about buckets and boundaries that, you know, we have to learn how to set boundaries for ourselves, and I statements that when you own your communication, you begin the process of taking back the power and not responding to demands, allegations, insults, and threats. Using your I statements is as easy as saying, I don't want to get in the car with you when you're yelling at me, versus saying, you're pissing me off when you yell at me. Giving it a big mental whatever. It took her 40 years to realize that a question was asked to me and the answer was demanded, that I could make the choice and not answer. That when someone is coming at you, my term for verbal abusers, they are often working to get you to talk to them so they can argue and attack. And rather than do that, just learn to say to them whatever and not, you know, give them that opportunity to argue with you. And she was talking about watching yourself talk, feed your mind, watch for the dripping faucet, that more it drips, it's just going to break altogether. But one of the things that Kim is talking about is that you really need to find positive self-messages when you're going through any kind of abuse, because you start doubting yourself. And we were talking a little bit about that, and I thought maybe you could address that.
Yeah, that ability to emotionally detach from a really volatile situation, or when that, I sort of call it like that hurricane internally starts to begin, right? When you start feeling like you're being backed in a corner, or you start feeling like you have to respond no matter what. Giving yourself exactly what you're talking about, giving yourself permission to take a breath, to step back, and to give yourself the ability to think. What happens when you're in a situation like that where you begin to start to swirl and you feel like you have no choices, what has happening is that that physiology in your body is starting to just swirl. It's, your heartbeat is starting to beat faster. And if you get to a certain level, you actually don't have the ability to think clearly after your heartbeat starts racing. It's called flooding. And when you start to get flooded and then you start to feel like you have no choice in the matter, what's happening is your intellect or your ability to make decisions is actually physically being affected. It's a physiological process that's happening. So what you do to help disengage is, it's really easy. You just breathe calmly. You emotionally take a step back, you take a deep breath, and then you bring your heart rate down. And you give your mind the ability to think clearly so that you can do exactly what you've suggested. Like, say, no, I don't want to get in the car right now while you're yelling at me. or you know, even in other situations where somebody's being abusive, it's like, you know, I would really like to meet that need for you, but I just can't until you ask me in a respectful way, right? Things like that.
I think people find that so hard to do, Kathy, you know, especially when you're living in it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
It is. Right. It is almost impossible. It is.
I mean, I like to tell that to people. This is all good advice. But when you're living in an abusive situation, I think that we just panic. It's hard for us to think when the abuse is coming forth, when somebody starts yelling, and then if you're going to say, stop, you know, or, you know, I'm not going to listen to this or whatever, you know, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, it just may enrage the person more, you know, when somebody's abusive. So I think that we can talk about strategies from here till heaven comes. The only real strategy is to get out of it, right?
Exactly. Because it's impossible for you, while you're in this constant trauma, fight or flight, phase or stage, it's impossible for you to correct anything. You're not going to be able to. The only thing you can do is control yourself, and the only thing that, and usually the only thing that, you know, the only way you can control your circumstances, whether you're even present or not, especially if you have an abuser who is where the abuse is so severe, right? And the kind of treatment is just so heinous, and yet you feel like in some way, you know, shape or form, it's appropriate or it's okay.
I like to, you know, remind women also that I know it's a struggle, and so many times you as a family therapist, I'm sure, hear the problem that I don't want to break up my family because it's bad for my children, right?
Right.
So can you address that a little bit?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of research that's coming out now, especially for families where one spouse has gone into a same-sex relationship and it hasn't been disclosed, which is typically the case with our, you know, with this realm. And the research is showing that the kids, they're struggling with a lot of anxiety as adults, right? They're coming through these situations, and what we're teaching our kids, if we don't deal with it, I call it almost like head on, or we don't move in a way that's honest for ourselves and honest with our kids, is that we produce kids that don't trust their own intuition. They don't trust their own sense of what's going on around them. And so they lose the ability, in some respects, to trust that inner sense of self, that inner voice, when they're in their own situations as adults. So the best thing, I always say the best thing you can do, the best gift you can give to your kids is the gift of honesty. And it doesn't mean that you have to be, you know, overly forthcoming with details, but it does mean that you can validate how your kids are feeling or the things that they're picking up on. Most moms will say, oh, my kids don't know anything's going on. And typically, you know, then when I start to meet the kids, they all know. They all know what's happening, maybe not in detail, but they all know that something is off. And typically if the mom doesn't, or the dad doesn't validate, you know, hey, you're right, there is something that's really off here, then the kid just walks away feeling like there's something wrong with me, because obviously everything's okay, right? And it's not really fair to them. So, yeah, you save them a lot of hurt and pain and questions later, the more honest you can be in the present.
I definitely believe that's true. And I know that so many times women say, I have to protect my children. Even when they leave the marriage, they want to protect, quote unquote, their children from finding out their fathers are gay because of what the effects are going to be. And you know what? I used to think like that 30 years ago because I didn't know anywhere to turn to find out anything differently. There was no support for this back then. And I also used to think, oh, my God, what if my children find out their father is gay? But guess what? They're going to find out one way or the other. And when you don't tell them, you keep that secret from them, what ultimately ends up is several things. First of all, they start to think there must be something terrible that we have to keep this a secret. And maybe 30 years ago it was terrible. But I think today, with so much understanding more of, you know, homosexuality, and there's so many issues with transgenderism. I mean, the things that we would never have heard about when I was younger, you know, are so out today. There's so much out in the open that it doesn't even seem that odd anymore. It's kind of like, you know, the way life goes, that kids are much more adaptable today than they were 30 years ago. So today, if you would tell this to your children, I don't think it's such a tragedy like it was, you know, back when my kids were young. But also, the more you keep these secrets, when they do find out, they're going to wonder what else you're keeping a secret from them. And I think that this really impacts on the relationship between a child and a mother. Now, tell me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely. That was exactly what I was thinking when I was talking to you. Because, honestly, think about you, wife, in this situation and how undermined your trust has been, right? You've trusted this person for 20, 30 years of your life, and then you find out this person isn't what you thought or isn't ever going to be able to give you what he promised to give you or even be who you thought he was, right? The level of betrayal and the level of trust has been so deeply, deeply wounded. Think about if you're the child and then you have a dad who has presented a certain way, and then you're 18 years old and you're starting to date and you're finding men on your, you know, you're launching, and then you find out that your dad isn't who you thought he was. And then your mom also comes alongside and is culpable in that. In other words, your mom comes alongside and also isn't honest with you, which thereby erodes the trust that she even has with mom. So there has to be somebody in her life that she can trust to talk about the hard stuff no matter what. Because that, you know, kids are resilient. I totally agree with you. But there's nothing wrong with being able to trust your child. I think when their kids are little, a lot of the thinking sometimes is, well, it's not something that they'll understand or know. When my kids were young, my youngest one, actually my second to the youngest one, is the one that asked me what was going on. And I decided right then in that moment, I'm going to be as honest as I can in the moment. I am not going to buy into the deception and the lie that has been perpetrated on me. I'm not going to do that to my kids, no matter how difficult. But it's hard. It's really hard because everything in you wants to protect your hope, dream, and expectation, right? Wants to protect what you, and maybe you're not ready to let go of that hope, dream, or expectation yet, right?
Exactly.
So maybe that's more why you're not willing to tell your children. And so what I would say to that is just be honest with yourself about what your motivation is.
Do you think some women feel that their children are going to question why their mom would have married a gay man, or maybe he wasn't gay when they got married? Or
yes. You know, it's interesting you should say that. My 26-year-old took me to lunch and sat down, and he was so angry with me. And finally it got under, this was just this year, and I've been divorced, what, 9 years now? And he said, I don't understand. How did you not know? How could you do this? How could you pick him to be my father? Right?
Wow.
How did you not know? Because today, in their generation, you know, this issue, you know, it's funny because he goes, Mom, this is just like a rote script. He said, you know, you were a Christian. He was a Christian. He marries you. You find out he's gay after he has 5 kids. He goes, that's like the script, that the typical scenario that all of us kids know about, right? But I said, you have to understand, when we were growing up, that's not how it was. There wasn't like a script like that. This was completely, you know, something that you would never guess could happen to you in a million years. So you're right. That whole generational part of it being so normalized for them, it wasn't for us. And so they don't understand. And there is, I think, a level of angst and anger that I could have, you know, been so dumb, you know, been so stupid. He didn't come out and say that, but basically, you know, in not so many words. And it was amazing, though, Bonnie, because he's been struggling for, what, 9 years now? And finally was able to confront me and tell, you know, basically he was trying to hold me somewhat responsible as well. And then he just cried. My big 26-year-old, 6'2" son just wept. But it took him that long to finally just realize, you know what, you know, I can move forward, and it doesn't have to be anybody's fault in terms of it being my, you know, my mom's fault.
I'm going to tell you some of the other reasons, since you brought that up, why women hesitate to tell their children, and they do it in good faith. It's not that they're not doing in their hearts what they think is right, but I don't know if you ever felt this way, that there's always the possibility that if you have a gay husband, you are going to have a child who could be gay. And parents have told me they didn't want their children having to grow up thinking, maybe this is me. Was that ever one of your considerations?
Well, keep in mind, I have 4 boys and 1 girl. I don't know that I was ever afraid of that being the case if I were to honestly admit that my husband was gay. Is that what you're asking? Like, you have to be more...
No, they were more afraid, not that they would be afraid their children would be gay, but the children would be overwhelmed by thinking, maybe I'll be gay.
I see.
You know, that it's hard enough when they're teenagers, all the issues that they deal with.
Right.
And now they're going to start questioning their sexuality. Is my father's gay? And this does happen. I mean, I see teenagers, when they find out their father's gay, they say, am I going to be gay? I know my kids went through it. And my daughter was gay.
And, you know, and I think it goes back to being honest in the moment. I think the more a child can talk to you about their sexuality from very young, the more they're going to feel comfortable in their sexuality. So if the topic itself of sexuality is something that's not something that a mom is afraid of, then I think that all of those discussions can be open, and all of those discussions can be full of truth and loving, right? Because that's the best. Again, that's the best gift I think we can give our kids, is to be truthful. So if you have a child who's struggling with their sexuality when they're 14, if they can come to you and say, Mom, you know what, I'm really struggling here, and I'm thinking I might be gay, you know, and Mom says, let's talk about that. And for them to get the message, okay, Mom loves me no matter what, right? Mom loves me with, if I had, you know, 2 heads and a tail, right? And what you're communicating there is something far more important than whether they are or not, whether they have, you know, what's going on with their sexuality. So I guess, again, it comes with being able to have open discussions and being able to be honest with yourself and teach them to be honest with themselves. Because what, we're in this situation, why? Because he wasn't honest with himself, right?
Do you have trouble getting through to people who are religious and who believe that, you know, and I know that you came from a Christian family, so I feel comfortable asking you that question, because I was having this discussion today with one of our women, and, you know, she comes from a family. She's more spiritual than religious, but her family just doesn't get it, because they feel that, you know, when you take marriage vows, it's for better or for worse. And if somebody has a problem, then you learned how to work with that problem, and they give you a million scriptures to verify that's how you have to do it. And have you dealt with that?
Well, yes. It took me, I think, 4 years to finally divorce my husband for that very reason. I didn't talk about my testimony, my like story, I guess, at the outset of our conversation, but, you know, actually I was, pregnant with, my twins the first time I found out about my husband's same sex acting out, who, by the way, was a music minister at our very, very large church that I had grown up with. So I had 4 children, and then I was, I was pregnant with my 3rd child. Sorry. I get the story in my head kind of mixed up. I was pregnant with our 3rd child. and when I found out about his acting out, 8 months pregnant. And so because of, I think, the bad information that I had, a lot of it coming from Christian believers that God could fix this, that he would get healed, that if I just prayed enough, if I was just a better wife, all of these things that was just straight up bad information, that we would be okay. So I ended up staying, and I, and then we, my husband got counseling, and we went kind of that whole route. And then when I'm, we ended up having our twins 3 years, 2 years later, after that third child was born, we had a set of twins. So obviously we had a sexual relationship, and, but that didn't mean that he wasn't doing what he needed to do to stay, you know, to stay true to his own, what he wanted to do. And so I ended up having my twins. And then about a year and a half after that, it was very obvious that he was going to choose that as part of his life and be open about it. And he had no regret. And, of course, he wasn't going to admit it to anybody. So everybody thought everything was just great and, you know, praise God. And it's like, lo and behold, I was in a worse situation because now I had five children that I was going to take through this situation with me. And, of course, the financial ramifications and the emotional toll that it had on me was horrendous. So I think that, yeah, having good information and knowing that, you know what, unfortunately, this is not going to change. And when I'm in session with people and I have this situation come up, you know, I'll have women talk to me and they won't come back because I tell them something they don't want to hear. But I feel like I'm giving them good information in that, you know what, you can be a Christian, you can love God, and more than that, God will love you and he will not ever leave you or forsake you. And all of those things that you believe so deeply are still in place, but it doesn't have to be tied to you being married to somebody who is never going to be faithful to you. And that was the piece that I didn't understand, right? I could be whole and healthy apart from this person who had betrayed me. Because
what
even though my husband betrayed me, God
wouldn't. How about if they would say, well, he's gay, but he's not going to cheat on me. He's going to withhold himself.
I just tell them it's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
Because they will. They will. If they could do it once, trust me, the second and third and fourth time become much easier. They just become more creative about how and when they choose to act out.
I'll tell you the truth, Kath. I do believe I've met a couple of men, too, out of a lot, that are not acting on it. But that doesn't mean they're a straight husband. They're still a gay husband. And that's the problem. Mm. That even if they're not going out and blatantly cheating on you, they can't be the husband that you need because they don't have the passion for you. They don't have the desire for you. And it's like living with a roommate because a gay man doesn't want you as a woman. And I think that itself, even though he may not be out there acting on his homosexuality, it's not that he can be straight. It's just that he may not be out there acting and having sex on it, but that doesn't change him. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that it's hell on you. I mean, it is how painful to watch your husband, and who this man that you love, not desire you in that way, because that is such a vital part of what marriage is, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a beautiful part of what marriage is. So my question is, why would it be okay with you to rob yourself of something that's so precious? And are you willing to give up having that piece and that part of you never being whole or healthy or satisfied? Right? And if you're 30, you're 32 years old, that I was like, what, 36, 37, 38. It's like at 38 years old, am I willing to live for the next 50 years knowing that my husband is never going to want me, you know, in that way? or that he would rather have a man, you know, is, so my question is more, how is that okay with you? How do you reconcile that for yourself? Because, see, again, I think it's more, it's a matter of, we're not making the decision to stay with the person. We're just making the decision to be, to avoid what that pain is going to be like, to avoid, and I think it's a lot of fear too. It's like, oh my gosh, what does life look like outside of my husband, of this person who I love and who I've been with for so many years and who I have children with? And, you know, those are all the questions I think that are truly the real questions. Because I think most of us are going to sit down and have this conversation, and we're going to say, no, at 38 years old, I'm not willing to not be with a person that doesn't want me physically, right? But the real question is, I can't even begin to imagine what my life is going to look like if I really am going to deal with this issue for what it is. Because it's too big. It's too traumatic.
And I think that it is overwhelming anytime you have to leave a situation, especially a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And it is scary, mm-hmm. but it's doable and it mm-hmm. can be done. And one of the things I want to mention
yes.
to people is that Kathy is a family therapist in California, but she's a straight wife specialist because she works, you know, very closely with many, many straight wives, having gone through this herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to a young woman tonight, mm-hmm. and I said to her, you know, no matter how good your therapist is, nobody can understand this like someone who's already lived through it. And I know, for
mm-hmm.
instance, you know, you certainly lived through it. Kim Brooks, you
mm-hmm.
know, who will be meeting at our healing weekend, she's lived through it. Suzette, you know,
mm-hmm.
Suzette Hinton Fernand, who's a coach, but, you know, she's lived through this. And you
mm-hmm.
can get all kinds of therapy and coaching, but when you find someone who really is a specialist like you, I mean, it's so valuable.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do have so many issues that other people do not have. And I,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's divorce plus a whole lot more. Because
yeah.
divorce is hard enough as it is. But when you get divorced in these situations, I say there's so
mm-hmm.
many other extra things that we have to go through. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do. I do. And, you know, and some women actually have good friendships with their husbands, right? A lot of divorces, you don't have that component. And so so it's kind of like, I like some of the research talks about, you know, you feel like you're divorcing your best friend kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it
right.
just doesn't add up. It's just, you just can't, one and one does not equal two, you know? And so
mm-hmm.
that in and of itself is a big part of it. And then you have like the whole community, people in the community who look on your marriage as being one of the best marriages out there, and people would be so surprised and so shocked. Well, you know, so you have that whole piece, right? Because it's like, well, then what do you do with the fact that, well, really the biggest issue is he's attracted to men. It's like, you know, yeah, that's kind of an unusual component to our, and then just the level of betrayal and the level of trauma that we go through and having been so betrayed for so long, and just our lack of understanding about what it is that we're facing, and it's, and then you have family components, and yeah, it's a huge, and I used to, I was a paralegal before as a therapist, so I worked with people divorcing families all the time, because
mm-hmm.
I did a lot of family law and federal litigation and whatnot, so I know firsthand what it looks like to go through a divorce with, you know, in a heterosexual sense, that this isn't the driving reason. And it is very different. There are a lot of different components that come up just because of this. And,
uh-huh.
and you know, the other thing too you got to consider is if you're divorcing or thinking about divorcing a narcissist or even a sociopath, you know, or a psychopath, you know, that in and of itself has a whole nother component. And there, we know that there are a lot of situations where that is part of the dynamic. And so that throws a whole new caveat into it. So, yeah, it's quite complicated.
Why do you think that is? Just out of curiosity. I always love to listen to your insights on this. So many of us have husbands or ex-husbands who are narcissistic and borderline personalities. I mean, my
mm-hmm.
personal opinion is that, you know, when you start living a lie on a day-to-day basis, you know, it becomes very easy to
mm-hmm.
keep lying. For no reason at all,
yeah.
and you're always trying to, you know, protect yourself and cover up those lies. But
right.
I think a lot of these men are very narcissistic. They put their needs first. your needs come second.
Yeah.
And I think
right.
in many ways they believe that they're psychologically on some level that they're doing you a favor by being in this marriage where they don't want
right.
to be. Do you
right.
think that's
right.
part of it?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there's a piece of that the duality of having to live two separate existences, even if it's in your own head, is going to drive
uh-huh.
you crazy at some point, right?
I agree.
And so the narcissist part where, I think it's important to distinguish, the narcissism is that nothing is ever your fault. Nothing is ever reflected on you. Everything everybody does in life somehow, some way revolves around you and points to you. So there was a very big component of narcissism in my situation because my ex-husband wanted to keep having children. And I thought, oh, he's so loving and he's so generous. Well, no, it's just these kids, kids love their daddies. Kids, think that their daddies are the best thing, right? So it was feeding this narcissism in him that I didn't recognize was needed to be fed. And the same
uh-huh.
was true for my presence in his life and a lot of other things. The thing that I realized after I had two associates, therapists, friends of mine, that as I described situations that have happened for me, basically, even as a therapist, I couldn't see this, but they said, your ex is a straight up sociopath. And I thought, oh my gosh, they're right. Because
uh-huh.
his lack of care or concern about how any of his behaviors affected any of us, and how he had zero empathy and zero ability to connect with what he was doing to our family, put him in a whole nother category for me. Because I think I kept expecting him at some point to get it, right? I kept expecting him to realize this is going to be, And so I think as you grow in this and you educate yourself and you become more aware of what you're dealing with, I think that's a
mm-hmm.
really important thing is to understand, okay, he's not only a narcissist, but for me to go, okay, he's also a sociopath. So I need to change my expectation that somehow, some way he's going to care about what this does to the kids or does to me, right?
Uh-huh.
And so if I can change my expectation, then I'm far more able to be realistic about, and I won't be so disappointed with what I'm actually experiencing. Because I keep setting my hopes really high, or I keep having this expectation that I keep getting disappointed, then I'm just hurting myself. So I think it's really important for that therapist to work with you to be able to distinguish what it is that you're really dealing with here. And not for
and
the
I
purpose
think that's
of making
the whole
somebody
big
good
issue,
and bad,
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of women just keep thinking, if I can do a little better, I'll
right.
He'll make the connection.
Mm-hmm.
I'll get him to see it. He'll realize what he's doing to the kids. And, you can
exactly.
go to try to convince them, the kids, don't you see how this is hurting them? No,
right.
they don't see how it's hurting them, and they really don't see
mm-hmm.
how it's hurting them. It's not
they
even
really
that
don't.
They don't care. They just don't
right.
see it.
That's right. They don't
and
have
I
the
do
ability.
Say that, and I know that people may not understand this, but gay men don't think straight. I mean, they are not straight men, and I do really believe that gay people and straight people have different thought patterns. It's not a better
mm-hmm.
or a worse. It's just different.
Mm-hmm.
How they
mm-hmm.
see life, what their perceptions are growing up as a gay person, going through the struggles
mm-hmm.
that they go through. I'm not sitting and placing blame. I'm just saying that the thought processes are different. It's
mm-hmm.
just the same as we can have sympathy and compassion for people who have a disease, but unless we have it, it doesn't mean that we can actually feel what they're going through, like I say, with straight wives. Unless you've been
mm-hmm.
through this experience, I don't expect people to think exactly how we think. And yet we could have
right.
20 women in a room from all over the world, and yet we all think as one.
Yeah.
Because we've
yeah.
all had
That's
this
right.
experience. But the same thing with
right.
the gay and the straight experience. Gay people are brought up with different life experiences, and they don't think the same for whatever the
mm-hmm.
reason. It's their own
mm-hmm.
internal upbringing of who they are. So I think that's
right.
the problem a lot of times. We keep trying to make something happen that's just not going to happen. And I know
mm-hmm.
that in some cases there's a lack of connection, emotional connection, and I'm not
mm-hmm.
placing blame or fault. I'm just stating what is, and we have to stop trying to make something happen that's just not going to be happening.
Right.
Like you say, why
right.
are you
and
putting forth all this effort?
Right. And, you know, I think the best way to do that is to get healthy yourself. So if you can just focus on getting healthy and whatever that means for you, right, and it's different
right.
for every person. Mm-hmm. And in taking the focus off of him and taking the focus off of what he is or isn't going to ever be for you at some point. And then because I guarantee the healthier you get, a lot of this other stuff will just naturally fall into place, right?
Absolutely.
You're not going to ever settle for less than what you deserve if you get healthy.
If you get
and
healthy,
that's really
and that's
cool because you, that's right, because you have the ability to change it. You have the ability to get your needs met and to live a life that's happy and abundant and free from all of this.
And I think that until you're ready to do that and take those steps, you're going to keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. And that's why you need to see a therapist who can really work with you.
Yeah.
To see what mistakes you've made in the past that can be corrected for the future. And especially I tell our women, when you come out of these relationships, you are so vulnerable and you are prime picking for people who are predators.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about gay. I'm talking about people who are predators who see that you're weak and who are looking for someone to they can control. Or a narcissist, someone who they can take over their lives. I mean, there's so many different aspects of this, which is why getting healthy is the most important part. And that's why, you know, Kathy is an amazing, amazing therapist. I mean, certainly if I was just starting my journey, Kathy, you are the person that I would be going to and getting my help from. Well, you are. I mean, there is nobody who I could ever suggest could be any better at all. But the thing is that Kathy is in California, but she does do phone counseling and Skype counseling, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do. Right. Mm-hmm.
So wherever you are,
and
you know,
and I would say that regardless of what therapist you see, just a couple of guidelines. One of them is to make sure that they don't have an agenda for you. I think it's really important that the client gets to set the agenda. I'll have clients come in that are in this situation who are married and who have no intention of leaving, you know, for whatever reason. And it's like, okay, that's where you're at. It is not my place to set that agenda for you. If anything, I understand that more than anyone because it took me 4 years to finally say, okay. I mean, between actually filing for divorce and then actually like bringing it to fruition. So I understand that. I really believe that like as a Christian, the Bible teaches that love hopes all things. And I think when you love someone that you hope, but in this situation, the longer you continue to hope, especially for someone who has no intention of changing or even owning, you know, what's going on for them. I think that it just becomes destructive for you to maintain that hope, but it's cool as a therapist, because in session, you know, I can say that, but then I can also say, but I understand why you need to hold on to that hope, and it's okay.
Kathy, how can people get to you? They can go to your website, right?
Yeah, they can go to my website. It's still the confusing name that you don't like, Bonnie, but it's www.kholgeintherapy.com. So, and
or
my
you can write to me or go
there.
To my website and see Kathy under my resources. You know, and click into her website through there, or just write to me if you'd like to get in touch with Kathy. And I'm so excited, Kathy, that in a week from now, I will have had the opportunity to spend 2 days or 3 days with you. I'm going to be so excited to see you at our healing weekend.
Yeah,
and that's,
so glad.
Like I say, one of my great highlights in life, getting to see you again and have you work with our women. And it's going to be a fabulous weekend for all those who are coming. And I'm really looking forward to that big hug from you. And I want to thank you so much. I'd love for you to come back and do a program about when you're going for a therapist, things to look for. And I think that's a
great
for another show. Right?
Good idea. Yes. Yeah. Because there
are
a lot of good
ones. All of our listeners,
there,
I know it was short but sweet, but thankfully Kathy got here. And Kathy, you know I love you. And I'll be seeing you in just a few days.
Yes. All right. Blessings to you.
All right. So
good
night to all of our women. Love to you all. And Kathy will be back with us again soon. All right. Good night.
Good night, Bonnie.